My guest at this time is famed First Amendment attorney Floyd Abrams. He's a partner in the firm of Cahill, Gordon & Rindell, and he's the author of Friend of the Court, On the Front Lines with the First Amendment. We want to get his thoughts on the growing stories here in Washington about how the Justice Department has been investigating different journalists, first the Associated Press, and now we know about a journalist at Fox News as well, for different reporting that they have conducted. And Mr. Abrams, thanks very much for being with us.
It's good to be here.
We obviously know the basics of both of these stories. The Associated Press reporting that they were only told after the fact that 20-plus phone lines, office, cell phones, home lines, those records were seized by the Justice Department. A lot of different aspects here. From the fact that the AP was never even notified and asked to cooperate. Some people are upset with the number of phone lines involved. What was your reaction to that, and what questions do you think are most important to get answered here?
Well, I think the words that you used earlier, after the fact, is the key one. It's one thing to say the government can have a leak investigation, and in fact, some leak investigations are justified. But the rules of the game as set forth within the Department of Justice itself, is that as a general proposition, you got to tell the press organization, you got to talk to them, you have to try to come to some sort of agreement. And underlying that is that if you can't, and I don't think they could have here, that gives the press organization a chance to go to court and have a judge decide how to weigh this factor and that factor, you know, how much does the government need it as against what is the intrusion into freedom of the press. And I do fault the Justice Department for not giving them notice, for not giving them a chance to go to court. The only possible justification that I can think of, certainly on the record here, is that the department said that they were doing it because it would interfere with the investigation. I don't know how. I'm not persuaded of that at all. And so, you know, I think what was lost here was a chance to get a view from a neutral observer who could weigh the implications, the First Amendment, the free speech, the press implications, as well as the government's needs. So I think that was a harmful thing for the department to do.
One of the things we've also learned is that the CIA contacted the Associated Press about this story, which we can now report was about a terrorist plot to bomb an airliner, I believe out of Yemen, right around the one-year anniversary of the taking out of Osama bin Laden. And in response to the CIA urging the AP to hold the story, they did so. The AP leadership now says they were then set to run it when they got clearance from the CIA. The White House then said that they wanted them to hold another day so that the administration could make this announcement. And now it appears as though all of this is a response to the timing of this announcement rather than some sort of national security secret. What do you make of that aspect of it?
Well, yeah, all of that makes it all the worse. I mean, the AP really played by the rules, and by the rules I mean the responsible rules of journalists behaving the way we would like them to. They had a story. It did deal with a national security issue. They spoke to the government officials, the CIA people. They asked them to hold the story. They held the story. And then, as you say, apparently, because there was a perhaps political judgment made that the administration would like to reveal how this all came out and why no plane went down, the AP that then decided, well, if that's what they're going to do, now it's time to get our story out. And whether any of this after that was in retribution, you know, it's hard to tell, but it just makes the whole thing even more suspicious in terms of whether there was that sort of national security need to really behave as the department did. I mean, it's not a little thing for them to go to the telephone company and gather records of a news organization without permission, without even telling the press organization that they're going to do it. And I hope that the furor over this will at least lead them to act with some greater regard for these other interests, not just law enforcement ones.
Let me get your reaction real quick to another story that broke this week, and that's the story of James Rosen over at Fox News, who had gotten, I believe, classified information from an official at the State Department related to North Korea back in 2009. In response, the Justice Department obtained a warrant, in this case, to seize his personal email. Now the story says that they looked at his phone records, his parents' phone records, Fox News phone records, and so forth. They've named him in some documents as a co-conspirator, and in some cases possibly even a criminal. What are your thoughts on that story and the fact that both of these are running kind of conjointly here?
Yeah. Well, I think this one's even worse than the AP story. I've read the redacted version that is available of the application that the Department of Justice made in court. And as you say, they basically accused the journalist of being a criminal, literally a criminal, for doing the interviewing that they did and trying to persuade someone to give him a story. And I think back long ago when Dean Acheson was the Secretary of State under Harry Truman, he wrote a letter to a journalist and he said, "Your job is to pry and mine is to keep secret." And the problem here is that we ought to recognize that journalists at their best are prying, are asking questions, are trying to get information, and that treating them as criminals, branding them as criminals, is absolutely unacceptable.
So what should happen here?
What should happen is what's happening now. This is an area where a lot of criticism helps. This is an area where if there is public disapproval of what the Department of Justice is doing, I think there's a chance that they'll change it. I really believe that. That's not always true of Washington. But in this sort of area, I think public opinion can have a real impact.
What's your sense of how the administration has handled this? Jay Carney's line in most of these press briefings has been, "We believe in the unfettered access to the press, but there's got to be a balance here as well." Does that go back to your kind of prying versus protecting?
That's true that you need a balance, and it's true, of course, national security matters a lot. The fact is, it's just not an answer to what they've done. They can protect national security by giving AP notice in advance and letting them go to court and fight it out. They can protect national security without defaming, as I say, branding journalists as criminals. And so, I think they've got to lighten up a little bit and be a little more realistic about the proposition that leak investigations are not the single greatest priority of any administration, or they shouldn't be.
Just a couple of minutes left here with famed First Amendment attorney Floyd Abrams. And Floyd, you've been in many of these different battles over the years. Talk a little bit about where these frustrations, these controversies that we've been talking about in the last few weeks here stack up in some of the most significant cases you've dealt with.
You know, I think that the situation that's developed in the last few weeks, very unfortunate for the administration that they're all developing at once, but I think that situation has really been pretty rare. I mean, we've had conflicts between the press and the government throughout American history, the notion that in the name of finding out who leaked information, that more or less anything goes in an effort to find that out, that's something new. I mean, that sort of breaches the wall that has historically existed. On the one side, you know, the press does its thing. On the other side, the government does its thing. It's a new and troubling development. As I say, the only optimism I have from it is that I think in this area, this or any administration, you know, they don't want to be criticized, and they don't want to be criticized by the press in particular. And, you know, I just hope they get the message.
What else will folks find if they pick up a copy of Friend of the Court?
Well, what I try to do there is to go through a lot of different areas of interest, I hope, to the public. Articles and some speeches and some debates. I think some of the things that I enjoy the most rereading are, you know, a debate with Professor Catherine MacKinnon, for example, a great scholar, a great feminist leader, in which we had a debate about issues of the First Amendment, the right to print stuff, on the one hand, and her view that a lot of what was being printed was, in effect, pornography and shouldn't be allowed. And I made the argument that you know, we really have to have an open marketplace of ideas, even if the ideas are offensive and even if they do some harm along the way. And that one of the messages, I guess I'd say, of the book is an underlying message of the First Amendment. It's nonpartisan and it's non-ideological, but it's basically that Americans have got the right basically to say what they want, to think what they want, to have freedom of conscience as well as freedom of speech, and that the First Amendment protects all that.
Floyd, we'll leave it there. Pleasure to talk with you today, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Floyd Abrams is a famed First Amendment attorney. He is a partner in the firm of Cahill, Gordon & Rindell, and his book is Friend of the Court, On the Front Lines with the First Amendment. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.